Escape the Mat Race with me, Lisa Staker, the Rebellious Coach. This podcast is all about empowering you to break free from the straitjacket of the traditional 9-to-5 and pursue a life of freedom, purpose, and fulfillment. If you're feeling stagnant and frustrated in your career and want to feel free and fulfilled, this podcast is here to reignite your passion for work and life by providing you with the resources and insights you need to take the leap and escape the rat race. So get ready to break free and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to this week's episode of Escape the Rat Race. And as we said last week, we're going to continue on with our discussion with David Francis, who we found all his story last week and some great tips on development and leadership. We're now concentrating on time management and how you fit things into a very busy life. And as we learnt last week, David has an extremely busy life, being a leader within kind of the musics within schools and also a council on the council, local council. So, David, you described your last kind of life as full last week. Mm-hmm, how do you manage your time with having a very full life?
Yeah, I think the key thing there is about forward planning, really. And that is something that I do very intentionally. And, I have to plan my days and my weeks ahead of time and then be a bit disciplined in sticking to the plan sometimes when there's various incoming traffic, whether that's phone calls or emails or requests for your time and all the rest of it. But I think that there's kind of a big picture strategic approach, if you like, and then there's some kind of little tactical tools and tricks that we can get into. But I think that the key part of it is getting clarity on what you want your life to look like, what you want your days and your weeks to look like. And there's a great quote that if you don't fill your time with kind of high quality inspiring stuff, it'll get filled with low quality uninspiring stuff that drains you. You know, if you don't fill it with stuff that excites and inspires you, it'll get filled with stuff that isn't like that. And I know I mentioned Jim Rohn in the last conversation, and there's a great Jim Rohn quote where he says, if you don't have a plan for your life, you'll fall into somebody else's plan. And what do they have planned for you? Not much. and that's like a nice line, but I think it's true. And so I think having a plan is key, but making sure that plan is actually going to be a week or a day that you want to live through. So I've been doing the planning bit because I've had no other option for a number of years, just because I have to try and fit the different things in. But I know we spoke in the past a couple of weeks ago, and I told you about this story of if somebody sat down at a table with some blank paper and some colouring in pens and stuff, and drew a picture of a monster and then looked at it and was terrified and ran away, you'd think that person was like off the map a little bit. But that's what I used to do with my calendar. I would put all this stuff in, and I used to do that. Oh, someone else wants a meeting here. I need some time to get back to people's emails and phone calls and all of that. And then I would like turn over the, you know, when you click to the next week in your calendar, and I would suddenly think, oh, what have I done? There's no time. There's no time for me. I don't want to live through this week. And so I think the big picture strategic bit is to get really clear on what you want your life to look like. And that could be what you want your day to look like, or your week, or your month, or the next quarter, whatever it is. And again, this came out of some coaching that I had a couple of years ago. And a coach I worked with talked about thinking about this like a jigsaw. So when you're going to do a jigsaw, the important bit is the picture on the box. So that tells you what it's going to look like by the end of it. Then you look for the corner pieces, and then you look for the edge pieces, and then you worry about all of the little bits in the middle. But you have to have that structure. And so your jigsaw, if you like, your whether it's your picture or your corners or your edge pieces, is the things that are most important to you. And that would be different for you than it would for me, and it would be different for everybody else listening. But if you're clear on what your values are, and when I say values, I'm talking about the things that you actually value as opposed to the social ideals of integrity and honesty and all that. I'm talking about, okay, things like relationships, health, leadership for me, experiences slash memories is one of mine. And so if you're clear on that, you then want to make sure that you're filling your time with stuff that reflects that. And you can't really afford to neglect any of those too much, and especially the ones that are around looking after yourself and looking after nurturing the key relationships in your life. And so when I do that exercise of plotting out my week and my month, I'm trying to make sure that I've got stuff in there that I know is going to inspire and energize me, so that then I can show up well on the other days and for all of the other things. And there's a speaker and coach who I've done a little bit of work with named Michael Heppel. And Michael Heppel's got loads of backstory of really well-known clients. So I believe he's worked with Davina McCall and Sarah Cox, and he's worked with Patrick Keelty and all this. But he also works with everyday people like me. And I heard from Michael Heppel this great thing about having three types of days in your week. And it's me days, E days, and stuff days. And so in an average week, probably most of the days are stuff days because you've got all kinds of stuff going on. But then the idea or the advice is to have at least one key day where you keep that free for moving forward the big projects. And importantly, you also have a me day, which is a day for yourself to do things that you enjoy and that are going to help you feel restored and recovered. And the whole purpose of the key day is to get you ready for the other days, for the you do the me day so that you're going to do the key days and the stuff days well. And it's again another kind of line on this is that rest isn't a reward for having done the hard work. Rest is an essential prerequisite for performing well. And that's the bit that I fell foul of a number of times over the years, trying to do all of this stuff, feeling like you can't possibly take a break, and then kind of crashing and burning. And so I think like one of the key lessons I've learned for myself is that I need to make sure that when I do the jigsaw of my week or my month, there's specific things that I make sure I've got in there. So I make sure every month I have a full weekend off. I know not everyone will be able to do that, but like that's something that I decided I was going to work towards making happen. Every quarter, I have a trip away somewhere with my other half. Every week, we have a date night, if you want to call it that. So it's, we both have lives that are, our work is not just 9 to 5. So we both have stuff on evenings and weekends. So we make sure we like get the calendar and actually plan it ahead several months in advance. Actually, when are the weekends off going to be? Where are the kind of date nights going to be? I personally find a lot of benefit from kind of physical fitness stuff. So I know I've got in my calendar, in my diary, if you like, the first thing I do every morning is I go and train. And if I know I've got those bits in there for me, everything else slots in around that, and it works well. And then the real like day-to-day tactical stuff, I try and structure my day, and I'm lucky that I've got some autonomy over how my day works. But I know not everyone will have that, but there's probably elements of this that you can kind of borrow or adapt. I try and structure my day so that the first block of time of my day is for moving stuff forward and the key priorities that I'm trying to work on this week or this month or this quarter. And I try and leave the reactive and responsive stuff to the afternoon or later in the day at least. So I generally don't like to have meetings booked in the morning. I generally don't like to get caught up in my emails in the morning because I know it's all too easy to you start answering emails and suddenly you're being controlled by everyone else's agenda, and then so you look around and it's 5 o'clock and like where did the day go? And you didn't get any of the stuff done, and now you've got today's list now has to knock onto tomorrow's list and all the rest of it. So try and block off the morning for the proactive stuff. And a big part of that is trying to do things one thing at a time. So single tasking, not trying to not trying to multitask and failing at it. Because that, for me at least, when I'm trying to do all of the stuff and I haven't got any clarity on what the one thing is I'm supposed to be doing, that's when I would feel stressed and overwhelmed and time poor, if you like. But yeah, so I try and have like that first bit of the day for proactive stuff, and I try, and you probably can't see, but there, because I have multiple roles, I have three separate mobile phones behind me there, but they're all out of reach of my desk, and one of them is on airplane mode, so I can't get pulled off course by, you pick up your phone to answer a phone call, and suddenly there's a social media notification, and next thing you know, an hour's gone by, and you've got distracted. So I try and like have some phone free time to focus on key stuff, and I try and have a list of everyone's got a to-do list. And I've got a digital to-do list on my computer, which is, I'm not going to lie, several pages long. And a lot of the things on that list will never get done. And I've come to realize that's actually okay. Just like all of the emails will never get caught up on. If you did get to inbox zero, which I do like to do from time to time, it doesn't stay like that for very long. And it never will. There's always going to be more stuff to do. So I think a big part of it is prioritizing. And so I have, on a weekly basis, and the other people that I work with do this as well, I have a kind of key three tasks for this week. And then each day, I would show you, but it would undermine what I'm saying. I will show you. I've got a post-it note which has the key stuff that I'm supposed to do each day. And I try and keep that list to being like three to five things. The reason why I hesitated to show you is because I know I've added a couple of things on today since this morning started. But it's trying to really separate out what are the important things that are going to move things forward and have an impact versus just the busy work and the responding to everyone else's stuff. And I think that the final bit of that I've learned the hard way, and I'm still learning actually, is learning how to say no gracefully. Because if you're the type of person that wants to help other people, that wants to serve other people, it can be tempting to just say yes to every request that comes in. Somebody wants a meeting, somebody wants you to do a thing or go and speak at somewhere. And there are certain things that I will always try and make happen because they're the things that energize me and light me up. So if I, in case anyone couldn't tell listening to this, I quite like speaking. So if I get a chance to go and speak somewhere, I know that I'm going to enjoy that, and it's a thing that I'm trying to get better at as well. So I'll usually take advantage of those offers when they come in, and I might move things around to make them happen. But I don't just say default yes to everything all of the time, because I have done that in the past, and it you end up just with the calendar that makes you want to run away and cry. So I think learning to say no gracefully, and there's a few kind of templates that I've seen for that over the years, but the simplest one is just to say, I'd love to do this, but I'm afraid I've got something else in the diary. If that changes, I'll let you know. And the thing that I sometimes forget to do is to then put that thing that I know I can't do in the diary, so that afterwards I can message the person and say, really sorry I couldn't be there last night, but how did it go? And they know then that I've actually, like, I wasn't just fobbing them off. I was interested, and it just wasn't the right time. And I think that the other tactic for saying no gracefully is to just be really upfront and say, this sounds like a really interesting opportunity, but I've got a few key projects that I'm working on at the moment, and I want to make sure that I do them justice, and I wouldn't want to take something else on if it meant that it was going to compromise my ability to do both. And I would rather do don't I need to focus on doing these handful of things well. If I say yes to this, I won't be able to serve you at it in the way I would like to do. So, therefore, regretfully, I can't do it this time round, but please let me know how it goes, and I'll let you know if my availability changes. And then the final bit of saying no gracefully, I think, is if I was to open up my Outlook calendar now, or Google Calendar, or whichever platform people use, There are empty spaces in there. And then there are spaces where I've blocked in appointments with myself to do certain tasks. Like I have blocked in most days a block of time for responding to emails and phone calls. And it can be really tempting when then somebody asks you to do a thing or go to a meeting to then just get rid of the thing that was just an appointment with myself to do a thing and put something else in there. Whenever I do that, unless there's a space I can move the emailing block to, that's when I start to like the wheels come off a little bit because I've planned my week and I've got to have the discipline to stick to the plan because I know the plan works because I only ever schedule myself to be doing one thing at a time. And it's when suddenly then you're trying to be in a meeting and be on your emails and then someone sends you a text message and all that. That's when you feel stressed and overwhelmed. But it's also when you're not going to be doing any of those things as well as you want to. So I think, trying to be clear on the single tasking thing is important for me.
No, it's some brilliant points there. And I did a LinkedIn Live a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of those things are very similar sort of themes that are kind of coming out from it. So it's really good to hear that things we're kind of saying there is something which you practically put in your very full life to kind of get things going in there. And I think the kind of key takeaways was those non-negotiables, those values. What do you want in there? And someone that I do some work with, she always does her diary like you. She says, I put in there the non-negotiables. The things I really want to do go in first, and everything else fits around it. So if you're trying to find some time, whether it's to have some think about what you want to do with your job, you said about that time, we spoke last week about kind of having some time to actually think about what you wanted to do, what you want your life to look like, or to retrain, or to do something you love. If you've always wanted to do a hobby, to be able to find that time in there, make it non-negotiable. Put it in your diary, fit things around it. And as you say, when you there's ways to say no to people that makes them feel as though they're not just being turned down. But most people, when you say, I can't do this, I'm really busy, you can, either saying, I can't do it, but let me know how it goes, or I can't do it now, but how about a different time, are very accepting of it. And they feel much more respected and loved for it than you just saying no. And so, and it, we feel uncomfortable with saying no, and
We do.
we shouldn't do, because people say no to us, so why shouldn't we be able to, mutual respect, we can actually say, this is our precious time, this belongs to me, and I've chosen no, I can't do this. But it doesn't mean that I'm not interested in what you do. It doesn't mean, it's just not on my, I suppose, whether we call it kind of critical path in kind of project language. Not in the kind of what I can cope with at the moment. And actually, then it makes you much better. If you do say, you don't say yes to everything, you have more energy to do everything else. And that then impacts all the work you do, you're in relationships with others, your relationship with yourself.
I think from a leadership perspective, there's a big part there around asking yourself, what are the things that either only I can do, or what are the things that I can do better than maybe somebody else might do them? What are the things that I can do, but I know I don't do them as well as somebody else on the team, or I know somebody else likes doing this kind of thing? And then being aware of that. And in terms of getting back to the idea of empowering people, which we spoke about previously, there's this idea of delegation, which I kind of buy into, but I think the word sometimes has negative connotations, like you're just giving other people work to do, you're just assigning tasks to other people. But the other way to look at it is you're giving them a chance to develop and build their own skills and capacity. And if you don't do that as somebody in a leadership position, you become the bottleneck in your team because if everyone ha is having to come to you for answers or help with things, and it's the, it's the idea where if you're running a business or a team where you don't have a where you don't have freedom, you're just another employee of the business or the organization. And if you're not careful, and I say this as someone who has felt like this on occasion, it feels like you're working for everyone else. And so I think it's being careful about that. And I've spoken to multiple people who've told me versions of the same story where they're behind with everything and they'll be working up their emails from the bottom in date order, like starting with the oldest ones first. And they'll get a question from somebody on their team or somebody they work with. And then 3 or 4 emails up, the person solved the problem for themselves because they've been waiting a little while to get an answer. And that tells a story, doesn't it? Because if they had it within themselves to find a solution to the problem, why did they feel that they needed to come to you in the first place? And when that's happening, it's not really their fault either. If you're the leader and you haven't made it clear to them what your framework is for making those sorts of decisions, that's sort of an alarm call there that, okay, I maybe need to do a bit more work with that person so they understand what's in their remit, what they can make decisions about, what's the level of thing that would need to come to somebody else for approval. But I think understanding and having clarity over the decision-making process, because, you know, if I took the day job that I have as an example, we have a kind of stated mission statement that's on, you know, on the website and on the email signatures and everything like that. And if you used that as the, if this is the framework that we're using to make the decision, what would the decision be? I think it becomes easier. And, you know, whether it's through a mission statement or a set of priorities, I'm trying to think of a specific example because I know there was one in our team meeting on Monday and I can't remember quite the detail of what it was, but you get the idea. It's like, you know, if your focus was thing A, you might come up with a different solution than if your focus was thing B. And so I think getting unity on your team or a group collective understanding of what do we actually think is the most important thing here, will dictate how you respond to it. And if you valued the customer experience as being the optimum thing that was your priority, you might come up with a different answer than if the thing that you were going for was most efficient use of funds, for example, or if your thing was keeping everybody on the team happy. Those things can't probably all happen all of the time, even though you might want them to. And so that's when going back to the previous conversation about difficult decisions, I think if you've got a shared understanding of the framework that you use for making decisions, it then becomes easier for other people to make those decisions without you. And I think the more you build up the capacity of everybody on your team that you work with, theoretically, the more that frees you up to do what your actual job is, which is probably not micromanaging everybody else and helping them do their jobs.
And you know your role, you're a leader. You're there to set an example. And I always think, you know, as far as kind of time management and setting kind of example of kind of empowering the people to make the decisions means that they will then, when they become leaders, automatically do it because you are leading. You're showing them a way of doing things and also
And you
leading
help,
by
yeah.
example. And as much as it's okay to t maybe I wouldn't I'm no I hate the word leave on time, but carve out some time for a lunch hour to go to the gym, or carve out some time to leave at a particular time on a certain night because you want to go off and play netball or whatever you want to do. And actually, by leading and showing it's okay, it means the people who work with you think, oh, that is okay. I can also do that. And that's a great way of showing that these other things in our lives are also important. And you can carve out time to do them. So through kind of all the kind of techniques, we can make better use of our time, but it's also okay to put those bits in the diary to say, you know, there's nothing better than a leader kind of saying quite openly, 1 till 2 o'clock on a Friday, I'm going to the gym, or I'm going to do some, I'm on a course or something like that, and doing it because then other people will do it as well.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And the one thing I really want to say is like, I'm not saying this as somebody who thinks I've got it all figured out. And you know, I know with regard to like the delegation piece and all the rest of it, I'm sure if there's people I work with that end up listening to this conversation, they'll be thinking, he doesn't do that all the time. Who's he trying to kid? And that's fine because like I know that, but I also know that I'm consciously trying to get better at doing all of this stuff. And when things don't quite work the way I would like them to, I'm trying to use those as learning opportunities and, you know, a little signal, okay, you need to work harder on that. You need to do a little bit of work to develop that thing. But yeah, I do think that you're right in terms of the leading by example. And, you know, we're all kind of influenced by the people around us, but rightly or wrongly, and positive and negative, I would say there's a multiplier effect there. When you've got somebody who's in a named leadership role, people pay more attention and are maybe more impacted by it. And that is why it's really important to look after yourself and show up in a peak state, if you want to call it that, or show up with good energy and leave people, I guess, at least try to. And again, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who say, well, he doesn't always do that either. But at least you've got the intention of leaving people better than you found them, and kind of lifting people up and making them feel more, energetic, more inspired, whatever you want to call it. Just leaving with more energy they had than when they came in, I think it's always a good aim to have in mind.
And so we've talked a lot about kind of the high level and kind of the leadership and things that we can kind of do to kind of carve that time into our day. I'm just very conscious of time. Is there a couple of tips you can kind of give to just kind of the more kind of detailed tips of how to kind of make better use of your time? Any tricks that you use?
So the number one thing I would say is to try and get away from distractions. So I don't have my email tab open, and I don't have notifications coming on my screen unless I'm doing a dedicated email block. I try and schedule in a block of time for doing emails and phone calls each day, each workday. And I try my best not to get drawn into doing them at other times, because those other times I'm supposed to be doing something else that isn't that thing. So that's a key one, like saying no to the distractions and getting away from that. I kind of made a reference to it before, but having the idea of almost a default diary of what you like, what you want your week to look like. And so that might be, well, I want a complete day off one day a week. I want an evening where I have some time with my other half, where we maybe go out or watch a film or do something together. I've got, like, 6 till 7 is when I train, whatever it is. You've got a bit of a structure in place that isn't going to be quite like that every single week, but at least you've got the picture of what you want it to be like as far as is possible. And so I think they're the kind of tips and tricks bit. But then being like, I like the idea, for whatever reason, of having a key three tasks. So whether that's the most important key tasks for the week, or the key tasks for today, or even your key goals for the month or for the quarter. And there's another great book called The One Thing by Gary Keller, and the whole process of that book, it was years ago that I read it, and I need to reread it. My memory of it, at least, is you start off with the far off vision, and then you kind of chunk that down to maybe 5 year, 3 year, 1 year, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, 1 week, today, right now. And so it's the idea of intelligent action, where you're doing something that you know is moving you towards where you want to end up. And as the date gets closer to now, or the time gets closer to now, the thing becomes much clearer and much more of an actionable step. And I think that's a really good framework to use when picking out your key three tasks for the day, or for the week, or for the month, or whatever. But trying to keep it simple, because it isn't simple. There's so many things, there's so many moving parts for everybody, whatever your role is, and everyone's got multiple roles that they fulfill. And I guess this isn't a tip, like a doable thing. It's more of a mindset shift, which is to realize that you're only human and you can only do what you can do. And there are so many things that you could do, so many things that any of us could do, and we won't ever have time to do all of them, and that's okay. And giving yourself permission to not be doing all of this stuff. You're not always going to get to the end of your emails every day. There's always going to be more emails tomorrow morning. You're not going to be able to go to all of the places you want to go and do all the things you want to do. So you can't do everything. But if you're intentional about what the things that you really want to do are, you almost certainly can do those things. You just have to be willing to let go of some of the other stuff that's less important.
I think on that note, we're going to bring things to a close. That's kind of fantastic advice. And that book, the one thing I have on my bedside at the moment, and I'm about
Yeah,
halfway through it. So yeah, I
very
totally
good.
agree with that one.
Yeah.
Brilliant book, and it is a great one for people to read. But thank you ever so much for your time today. It's
Thank you.
been some great advice in there, and we will put kind of your details into the show notes if anyone wants to kind of get in touch or have any questions for you, or if I say if anyone has anything, then do there'll be kind of contact details there. You can kind of contact either of us. So thank you ever so much, David, for your time, and we shall see you all on the next episode of Escape the Rat Race. Thank
Yeah,
you.
thank you. I've loved it.
That's all for today's episode of Escape the Rat Race. I hope you found it helpful and inspiring, and it has given you some ideas for how you can start taking action towards escaping the rat race to a life of freedom, purpose, and fulfillment. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on your favourite platform. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, feel free to reach out to me using the contact details in the notes to the podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Staker. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next time on Escape the Rat Race.